If it comes down to yearning or a paycheck, I will get the job done.
You know, that's real as fuck.
Yeah.
I think I found my tramp stamp, honestly.
Hello, it's Chris.
Hey everybody, what is going on? And welcome to Chris vs. the People, the show where real people tell real stories that may hit real close to home. I'm very excited for today's episode because we have, oh my God, our very first Disney Channel star. I'm sorry, that must be so annoying.
No, like, no, it's okay. I've come to be an acceptance of the fact that like, that is a
it's
notable-
It's a part of your history.
Yeah, it's a notable piece of my work.
And like it, I do want to say, like, that was my dream as a kid. Like, I wanted nothing more than to be like a Disney Channel star.
I think you are, it is.
Like, so to me, that's exciting.
Well, the thing is, when I came across your videos on the internet, I was like, this guy's hilarious. So the fact that you aspired for Disney, it's like you were already running laps around the comedy that that could be done.
No, I'm not saying that Disney's the comedy powerhouse of the world. But anyways, our guest is Karin Brar, and I actually found out about you because you were on, like I've mentioned, a Disney Channel show called Jessie.
Yeah.
And the kids I babysat, not to age myself, were obsessed with that show.
I'm so sorry. I feel like that's got to be really difficult to watch.
It was at a time when I was opposed to weed. And I think that had I been smoking it, it would have made a lot more sense.
Yes.
Didn't you have like a fucking iguana or something in that show?
Yes, I had a very large lizard. So like
I was a lizard freak growing up. So I think that's why I was like, whoa, this kid is like 10 and living my dreams.
So I hated lizards. I could not stand them. And I was like, whatever it takes to pay the bills. Basically
at
like,
age 11.
Yeah, age 11. I was like, I grew up in an immigrant family. We got bills to pay. Like the parents got the green card and then we were like, we have just got to keep. You're going to Disney, bitch. But no, when I was a kid, when you're under 18 with a lizard that large, the like laws require you to wear some level of protection. So I had steel-toed boots on anytime I shot with it. Yeah, it was insane. And then it really freaked me out. I still am not a big fan of reptiles, which most people are really surprised by.
I don't know if I'm surprised or not by that, but I'm surprised that you had to deal with one and to find out you hate them.
Yeah, it was kind of immediate. And then I think one of my favorite moments of working, I ended up doing a second show with Disney that was a spinoff of Jessie. And I think it was season two. And one of our producers, Sherry, her job is basically to facilitate everything that happens. And Sherry's job was to deliver bad news and good news. And she came up to me one day and she goes, hey, you know, you're over 18 and we would love this shot of like your face, like right next to the lizard, like down on the floor. And I turned to her and this was the one time I am very big on just saying like yes and committing to the job.
Totally. Are you a people pleaser?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. No,
real recognize real here.
Yeah. And I was like, Sherry, I love you. This is all I have. And it's not much. So I'm going to cling on to it as best as I can. Because normally they shoot me in like a split screen.
Well, I was going to say, could they not have just like superimposed that?
Oh, easily, of course. But, you know.
But why would you do that?
Why would you do that? Because then you have to match cut it. It's all these things that could have saved us 30 minutes. So I'd say that's probably the one time I've ever delayed production.
Damn.
Or I hope so.
Damn, let's see. Well, we're going to get into that. But I want to remind everybody to subscribe to Chris vs. the People wherever you get your podcasts. If you like video episodes, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. I personally am a fan of the video episodes, mostly because I am not an audio person. I have way too much ADHD for that. Also, huge reminder, Chris vs. the People is going on tour in the fall. We're going all over. We just announced a Denver show as well. The tickets are in the description. You can get meet and greet, general admission, either or. It's going to be a fucking blast. The live shows, I've said it a numerous amount of times, are literally what inspired the show.
I'm actually selling merch in the front.
Oh, you are?
Yes. Not your merch, but my merch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Dylan Francis opening for me. You're selling your own merch.
Own merch.
I love hosting a pop-up shop on the tour. What a magical time. So come through. We have so many vendors and more dropping soon, apparently. But it's going to be a good time. And then, as always, be sure to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/ChrisClemens, and join us for the Chris vs. the People After Show. And now that we have all of that out of the way, I do want to ask, like, what was the craziest part about being a Disney kid at, like, age 11? Like, did you feel how major that was?
Yes and no at the same time. The funny truth is when I first got the call, I was really disappointed. Like, I was really, really sad.
Why?
So when I was auditioning for the show, I had auditioned for another character. And it was against me and Cameron Boyce at the time.
Oh.
And we were competing for the same role. And then they kept bringing us back round after round after round. And eventually you do screen tests and they mix and match you with other actors playing other characters.
Yeah.
And eventually they brought Cameron and I into the same room and they were like, could you guys just improvise something? Mind you, we're 11.
Did you guys know each other before that?
Not at all.
Okay. So that's literally where you two met.
Yeah. We were competing against each other. I don't know what we said in that audition. We left, I think, I want to say like a week later, they called us both back and said, we both got the job and they rewrote the character to, cause originally the character was supposed to be from South Korea. And so they obviously rewrote it as a mixed boy that ended up being Cameron. And then for me, they created Ravi just like out of, you know, from scratch.
Yeah.
And I thought for me in my very child brain, I was like, wow, I did such a bad job. They're giving me a pity role.
Oh, I mean, that's exact. Like as a young kid who's like wanting to do something that's this big of like a risk or a leap. Yeah. That's got to feel like, holy shit, I'm a flop. But like at the same time, like it's funny being an adult and looking back and being like, no, Disney wouldn't have done that. They would not have spent money to have me be a pity role.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of actors go through this where they, especially if they start off as child actors, that eventually they get to the second half of their career in their 20s, whatever it might be. And then they start feeling the weight of everything that has happened before. And they're, it's kind of like how, you know, Lorde talks about her, you know, stage fright. And she talks about her three albums and she's just kind of like, her four albums. And she goes, you know,
I forgot Solar Panel too.
Solar Panel.
Isn't that what it's called?
Solar Power, I think, right?
I felt so confident. I always fucking call it Solar
Panel.
Panel.
Yeah.
I call it the what it isn't.
And you know what? I think she would be okay with that.
I mean, listen, Solar Power comes through solar panels, like, and like she's jumping on the album cover. So it's like, solar panel's hot. I can't step on it.
She has the enthusiasm of a door-to-door salesman selling solar panels in the 2010s. Remember when they'd be so enthusiastic? They'd be like, I'll give you a free iPad if you just let me put a solar panel on your roof.
No, I think that might've been a Disney thing, babe. I did not have that.
Big thing in Southern California.
Well, that makes, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, really a lot going on.
No, that wasn't really Delaware culture, I have to say.
Delaware doesn't have a lot of
solar panels. Yeah. No, I wouldn't say we do.
You're really missing out. No, but Lorde basically says that she was like, when Pure Heroin came out, she like had weirdly expected and just kind of knew that that was going to happen. Or there was like a comfort of being like, yeah, like, I guess that kind of makes sense. And as she got older, she was like, oh, this is insane. What has happened is truly insane. And I think, though it's obviously not on the same scale, I did feel later on that I was like, oh, that's a very unique circumstance. And I think like the process is so strange because what they do when you're like when you're filming a movie, they pay for everything.
Yeah.
And they fly you out, they put you in a hotel.
Do they not for television?
They give you a stipend. They're like
per diem kind of shit.
But it's like a flat rate moving fee and they're like, we'll pay for your movers. And my parents were kind of like, okay, he has a season guaranteed. We might as well. My dad has a big case of the fuck it's. So he'll just say like, fuck it to anything.
Wait, that's like kind of awesome though. Cause like, I don't know. I mean, like we've seen plenty of documentaries of like child stars whose parents are fucking crazy.
Oh yeah. And
so like how great that they were sort of just like, fuck it.
Yeah. I think having spent so much time on set with my dad, I feel so bad for him because I was such a moody teenager and homeboy had to deal with some really aggressive car rides to and from set. And now that I'm older, my mom's kind of just like, she's always very much been a big champion of mine, but she's like, I was telling your father we should not move.
She's
like,
practical.
Yeah, she was like, she was so in over her head. She was like, she was a teacher back in India, and then she ended up in Seattle with like raising two kids.
Were your parents born in America or were they immigrated over?
Yeah, so they immigrated.
Holy shit. So this is like, not only are they experiencing a completely new country
mm-hmm.
and a whole new culture because you're from Seattle.
Yep.
Or like Washington.
Yeah. And then they're also learning that they're bargaining with the fact that their kids aren't going to be raised the same way they were and end up the same way they were.
Did they like have high pressures for you guys? Because I feel like a lot of immigrant parents are like, all right, we're here.
Yeah.
We did this for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there was just a subliminal expectation of that. There was like a lot going on. And I think I can, you know, share this story now. Cause I always thought it was my parents who had shame around this.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up in Seattle, I also was under the state, like we had my uncle and his, and my two cousins live with us as well because they immigrated from India.
Yeah.
And we would spend our days, the younger kids would, obviously we'd go to school, and then my uncle would work at a gas station, and then my dad would go and work at the small businesses that they own, and my mom would work her corporate job. We'd all come home, scarf down a meal, jump in a minivan, and then my parents and my uncle, and I think my older cousin, would clean office buildings as janitors in the night so that they could help my uncle develop some savings.
Yeah.
And so that there was just always and we kind of knew as kids that our expectation societally, but also in like a personal level was, okay, your job is to be good at school.
Mm-hmm.
And plot twist, I was horrible at school. I was so bad at school.
Well, I mean, like, same, but I really think that the people who are horrible at school were just not meant for school.
Yeah.
I think it's important to go to school just for more so like socialization and like...
When did you realize you were not maybe like thriving in school? Because a lot of elementary...
Like kindergarten.
Really, straight off the bat.
No, kindergarten I fucked with because we were like still allowed to play with markers.
Yeah, of course.
First grade, I think, was when I was like, I don't know if this is for me. I called a kid a bitch at recess because he picked me last for football.
Yeah.
And then I got in trouble and I was like, yeah, this isn't my gig.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
someone
yeah.
give me a microphone and a glass of wine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are we doing here?
And honestly, you got there one way or another.
And honestly, look at me now.
Did you go to college?
I did.
Where'd you go to college?
NYU.
NYU. What'd you study? What'd you major in?
Buckle up, bitch. Photography.
Photography?
Yeah, baby. $250,000 for a degree in photography and a minor in communications.
So you probably know the fuck out of a camera.
No, like I did probably at one point. Do I now? No.
How is it having graduated with a degree in photography at the same time when Instagram photography was emerging and people just thought...
No, we can't talk about that. Like, I'm sure that Bryant is a wonderful person. I do not feel that carrying around a photo booth warrants you a photographer, but that is a conversation for another day because, listen, live your fucking life. I don't care. It's wild.
Yeah.
Like watching people like, what camera do you have? And I'm like, babe, it's not the camera. You mm-hmm. could have a tissue box and do like the whole like pinhole imagery bullshit and like have a great picture.
It's, yeah.
But that's, yeah, I went to college.
Yeah.
I'm glad I did. But like, yeah, I don't like, I went because my parents were like, you have to go to college.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, so true. I'm not a Nepo baby and I will not be able to survive without it. So I guess I have to.
Yeah. No, but I feel you. I was this close to going to college, and then I was like, thankfully, like work just kept, you know, coming at the time.
Yeah,
and
which
then,
is great.
And my mom was always like, she's like, well, why don't you go for a semester, like, or something?
Do you wish that you had gone to college? Looking back now,
no, I did, and the same reason I feel grateful for not having gone to real school growing up. I after sixth grade, I completely peeled off and just went into homeschooling. And I firmly believe that I would have been eaten alive if I was still in the white suburbs of Seattle as like a closeted kid.
No, that's so fair.
Yeah. And I don't thrive in an academic environment. Like I think I'm decently smart. Like I can get around. I have sometimes.
Yeah, you've got common sense.
Yeah. But I just like don't, like I don't know how to write a good essay. You know what I mean? Like I write a paper on something.
No, I definitely like was not good at writing papers. I did that shit like the morning of.
Oh, I did, however, have a brief stint where our neighbors in California were very beautiful and they were in college and she became best friends with my sister and she was over one day and she had to get a few more credits at UCLA and she was doing this online film course that she truly did not care about. And because I was so, had such a crush on her, I just did it for her and posted on the message boards. So there is some record of me rambling on about Star Wars and the importance of Star Wars in the zeitgeist.
Were you a Star Wars kid?
Massive Star Wars
okay,
fan.
I was,
and then I would be like watching her lectures and I'd be like, okay, what's the mise en scène going on here? Or I don't know.
You were down bad.
I was. I really,
like didn't even do school assignments for myself.
Look, I if it comes down to yearning or a paycheck, I will get the job done.
You know, that's real as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, That, I think I found my tramp stamp, honestly. Like, oh my God, it's either yearning or a paycheck and I'm locked in.
It is so strange. I just did this play earlier this year and it was 100 minutes and it was a tech thriller. And I was
in a tech thriller?
Yes. So it's like, think of Silicon Valley, but like really stressed out in a conference room.
Okay.
That was basically
So it's like House of Wax, but like House of Wires.
I don't know what that is, but I trust you.
You don't know what House of Wax is?
No, what's that?
The movie?
No.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Oh my God. I feel older than I did watching you as a kid with a giant iguana on TV babysitting kids.
I'm not cultured. I'm
Bitch, you just told me you gave a whole lecture on Star Wars.
I'm opinionated, not cultured. Two different things.
You are spitting bars today. Like, I really might have to pay you now. Like, you're really like, I'm getting a paycheck out of this.
Literally. I will do anything. When a paycheck is on the line, it is miraculous what I can do.
No, same. It's also miraculous what I'm willing to do. Like some brands will be like, I'm like, I see the email and I'll get an offer. And I'm like, no. And then I open the brief and I'm like, yeah, we're going to make this one fucking work. You want me in a bikini buttered up like a turkey? I'm in.
Wait, can we also talk about the early days of social media paid posts and the absurd things when no one knew how the internet really worked and what was going to like translate? Yeah.
I like can't talk about the early days of social media because like it makes me like so sad of where it is now.
Yeah.
Like, it was so fun. And now it's so not fun.
No.
Like, nobody is having a good time on social media except like these like white girls who know how to dance.
Yeah.
And like, even them, I'm like not totally convinced on.
Yeah. I feel like also if I was in their position, I would constantly be stressed when the social tide is going to turn against me.
See, but I don't think anybody's thinking that far. I think they're all just like, this will last forever, which like I'm also guilty of thinking of. And then it didn't last forever. And I was like, whoa, we've got to like clock back in and really work.
Sure, sure, sure. But do you feel like your work ethic declined or was
Yeah. But I don't know if my work ethic declined because like I'm currently like deeply in therapy for just like trying to, well, for a lot, but like mainly right now I'm trying to like disassociate my career with my self-worth.
Yeah.
Because like growing up, I was so proud of my work ethic. Anything I wanted, like I learned from a very young age that was like, you have to do that. Like I was a babysitter in high school. So that like, you know, my mom would give me money for like Panera and shit.
Sure.
But like really anything else was I had to do. And then college, same thing. And then with YouTube, when that started to take off, I was like, I had such a hunger because I was like, wow, I have so much to prove.
Yeah.
And then that work ethic really like, it's like I prided myself that I was like always so, I still will always say yes and like I will always people please and I will always show up and like go up 200%.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I have the same like hunger anymore. Like I have a hunger for being horizontal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I don't care to go to some of the lengths that I used to.
Yeah. It's so, I've been struggling with this a lot as well.
Because you're what, 27?
Yeah, 27. And I've been talking a lot with my therapist about my why and feeling like I need to reconnect with my why. And I'm so used to, I don't know, when I felt the exact same way as I got into Hollywood. Like I have so much to prove. And I felt like the one horse no one was betting on in the horse race.
The what? Oh, I thought you said the one whore no one's betting on. I was like,
well, that too.
Girl, you're more than just a whore.
Yeah.
You can be so much more.
And the truth is, Christopher, I am a whore. I just am on television.
And isn't that beautiful?
It's really when my grandfather sold his house so my father could get a one-way ticket to the States, that's what he hoped for.
His son to be a whore and on television.
And on television.
Well, on television, Debbie Ryan was one of your co-stars.
Yeah.
Were you a part of the pitch when she went into Disney Channel wanting to make history?
No, I was not a part.
You were not.
No, Debbie was a part of the casting process. So she was with us. Like she.
So you were kind of part of her plan to make history.
And you know what? I happily hitched. I rode her coattails to success.
Good for you.
It was kind of the best. She like really, she was the greatest. I mean, now that we're older, the moment we got onto Bunked, I remember Peyton and I looked at each other and we're like, how was Debbie 18 when this happened? Because we felt fully like so ill-equipped.
Wait, she was 18 and you were 11?
Yep.
That, see, I didn't pay that much attention to the show. Like, it was, like, on, and I was like, okay, they are so occupied. Like, the kids I was babysitting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I kind of just I saw all of you as children. Yeah, I had no idea that, I mean, this is also like Vanessa Hudgens trying to be like a high schooler in High School Musical too. Yeah, she's like 28 or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, but whoa, I didn't realize that you guys had that big of an age difference. Yeah,
massive age difference. And then when we got on, when we pivoted over to Bunk, we had like younger kids join the cast. And I was kind of like, why are these kids looking at me? I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So like, I have no wisdom to bestow on any of
these people. The blind leading the blind.
Yeah, I was like, I just know how to get to the end of the work week and I know what to do within those days.
I love that you're like 13 saying this. You're like, listen, I know how to get to the end of the work week.
Back in my day.
But I mean, I'm sure you felt way older than 13 when you were 13. Like,
yeah, I mean, like I grew up around adults and they obviously, you know, did a great job of making us feel like kids. And like one of our earliest memories on that show, which is really sweet, is that they, during our first Halloween on set, they had all the different departments have candy bags for us so we could go trick-or-treating, which is very, very sweet.
That is so special.
Yeah, it was really great. And it was also just like a lovely learning experience where it's the parts of my life that I wanted to be more mature and more respected was also like fostered.
Yeah.
And like I was curious about directing, and so that was always welcome that I could come early and I could check out how to do like.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
it seems like a really fostering kind of environment.
Yeah, it was a really great place for, I think with my circumstances, it was, and everything, now that I'm an adult, I'm like, everything has its trade-offs. It is sure. Ridiculous to assume that there is not any concessions you have to make. But yeah, I was like, I was a closeted queer kid who met my best friend in the whole wide world. And I was surrounded by adults who were, you know, like believing me, championing me, encouraging me. And I felt good at what I did. And at a time when in Seattle, like I was such a bad student. I wasn't good. I didn't understand what the purpose of school was. So it was nice to be like, but I can hit a joke. I know how to hit a joke. And that feels, and making people laugh, as you know, is not to be painfully earnest, but it is a very special feeling.
It is. Like, I mean, it does sound gay, but like, it does feel like a superpower to like be able to completely turn the mood around for somebody or like a room of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have like any wild stories from being a Disney kid? Because like, I think I grew up on the Disney Channel of like Hilary Duff, Miley towards the end of it, Raven, even Stevens. Like, so there was this concept, or there was this idea that Disney kids, once they like move on from Disney, have to like break this reputation and like go crazy. And then all this stuff comes out where you learn like, oh, they were snorting crack on, not like actually, but like, it was a lot more rowdy than it seemed from the viewer. Do you have like a wild Disney Channel like, just from being a Disney kid?
Yeah, I mean, I think the benefit for me, which worked in my favor long term, was that I've accepted that I have the face of a narc. So it's like no one is like looking at me and being like, girl. Yeah, like, hey, do you want to take a hit or like?
Well,
do
you, were you a narc?
No, but like I have a.
Would face you of, have?
No, no,
that didn't. You don't sound convincing at
no,
all.
No. I was a pretty, like, I just was, I towed that line where cool kids trusted me and their parents also trusted me as well. And they're like, they're with Karin, they'll be fine.
Yeah. I was also one of those kids, which I don't know why, but.
No idea. I really
took it. I was like, hell yeah.
I think, I mean, and of course you'd like, and I'd end up at parties and whatnot and just out of morbid curiosity, but I was also just like so goody two shoes that I was like, have fun. Like, that's great. I'm just going to be watching from distance. I think a lot of my crazy stories have more to do with actually making the episodes happen. I think people forget how difficult it is to make children's television. Because if you look at, say, Big Bang Theory, which has its own challenges, of course, but it's a machine, you know? Like,
well, all of these shows, because did you guys have a live audience?
And here's the thing.
Okay.
Our episodes got so, for the audience that's listening, with a multicam sitcom, you will typically shoot on Thursday and Friday. And Thursday, you will, you know, shoot for a standard 12-hour day, maybe less if you're really in a rhythm. And you'll knock out these scenes. There's four cameras. You have regular sets that you use, regular wardrobe changes, whatever. And then Friday is a really great day because everyone gets to come into work late.
Nice.
You pre-shoot some stuff, like kind of the same way that SNL pre-shoots some skits. And then you know, the live audience comes in, you shoot two takes of each scene in front of the audience. You knock it out. You play some of the feedback, the earlier scenes, so the audience knows what the story
is. This is like really a machine.
It's totally a machine. And it's the most fun to have a live audience there because you're really, people are hearing the jokes and really engaging.
Did that not like scare the shit out of you though? Like I would imagine if I was messing up, I would just be sitting there like, oh my God, there's just people now watching me mess up and they're going to go home and be like, he sucks. But that's maybe my own. Maybe I'm projecting.
No. Unless you're really, you know, your head is in the sand, I think it's hard not to notice all the moving pieces around you. So you want to like show up. Like you do understand that there's a cause and effect. So like really early on, we were all kind of like, we need to have our shit together and we need to not be dropping the ball. And
yeah.
It was just, there was never a situation where we would get on set and say like, oh, I really don't know the lines for this. Like that would be absolutely absurd. But we rarely had live audiences on Jesse because our shows were so complicated, and so we just kept doing, and like there's this meme on the internet that occasionally friends send me where they will show a clip of something really absurd happening and then it'll flip to the Jesse theme song and it'll be like Jesse intros be like, and that's really what it was.
Wait, were they that crazy?
I guess it was. I don't remember it that way.
All I remember is like an iguana, and was there like a fucking slide or something?
Yes, there was a slide in my room.
This is the shit that my brain is holding on to. This is why I was bad at school.
The way that I live rent-free in your head just really makes me happy.
No, it's definitely questionable.
it's
also,
like,
have you seen your Wikipedia photo?
Is it that bad? I can't Google myself.
I don't think it's bad, but like...
You're not convincing me at all that this is not that bad.
I'm trying. It's not bad. It's just like you are maybe 13.
See, I don't Google myself just because it's...
Maybe we should Wikipedia ourselves though.
I've Wikifeet myself. Wikifeet? Wikifeeted?
What's your score on Wikifeet?
It's really bad. It's like a 4.7.
Yeah, I pray to God I am not on Wikifeet. If I am
You're definitely on Wikifeet.
I pray to God not. My feet are actually... I think if I could cut my own feet off, I would. Like, that's a hill I'll die on. I think feet are repulsive. That is why watching Love Island this season has been so difficult. I hate feet. I hate them. Why? They're just disgusting.
I guess I'm more neutral on feet, but I will say it's not that I feel particularly proud of my feet. I just know I don't have particular, like, I don't have boy feet. Like, I don't have, like, gross, you know how boys are something, like.
Yeah, I have boy feet. I'm not so proud of them, but, like.
And we know.
You don't have to make it that damn obvious. Fuck. I've already pretty much intonated
hey,
that
I'm validating your truth. That's all, you know?
I would love other truths to be validated more than this one, but sure.
You're going to go back to your therapist and you're going to be like, this guest just absolutely bullied me the entire time.
I love that you think that this interaction is making even the top 10 of bullet points to bring to my therapist.
Aww.
I'm honored.
Okay, I'll try harder.
Try harder. You being 27, that's still young. I know some people...
It doesn't feel that way when you're in it. When you hit late 20s, you're like...
Try being 32. Clock it.
Yeah.
But... Like, you experienced so much at a young age. Was there anything where you, like, received a crazy perk or something that just felt totally, not inappropriate, but, like, out of pocket for a young person?
The amazing thing about coming up in the industry during the time of the internet is that you just got random free things.
Well, yeah, because like in the early days of YouTube, I was actually one of the older people, but like everybody was 15, 16, 17, and they were all getting blackout. And I'm like, I can't even, and that was just YouTube days.
Yeah.
Like that was when it wasn't even that respected still. Yeah. So to like be on a fucking network show and a child star, like.
I think the biggest one that I can think of is when I was 18 and me and my two best friends, one of us had gotten gifted a trip to Cabo, like beautiful presidential, like flights paid for, presidential suite.
No, for sure. Like, me too.
Yeah.
I love when a trip from Cabo and a presidential suite just falls in my lap.
We still confused to it. Till this day.
But you were legal adults at this point.
Legal adults.
Barely.
We could go on. And mind you, like, I had been flying alone to like work and job since I was like 15 or 16. Sure. Like my parents were kind of like, he's a very much a free spirit. He's going to do his own thing. But I was 18 and we get on a flight. We get to Cabo. And when I tell you that there was no restraint with the amount of alcohol that they had lining this room, they had so much alcohol there.
Well, the drinking age in Mexico is what, 18, right?
Yeah, 18.
Yeah. Oh.
And just so, and of course us being like goody two shoes who just aren't used to,
finally we can do this legally.
Legally. We were just like, well, what do we do? Like, and we were just like killing time. A marker of culture in the 2010s, or like one thing that really marked the 2010s for me, was like Tumblr photo shoots. Like people would just be like, let's do a photo shoot. And there was a hot tub on the balcony. And so we proceeded to grab, I don't know why we did this. We're children, clearly. We got all the alcohol, all the Tecate lights.
And you like lined it up around you and made it look like.
And we just like did an entire photo shoot, just like, and then.
That's the realest shit I've ever heard.
We got absolutely obliterated.
Well, yes.
On once again, Tecate Lights. I don't know if
what
you've
done. What is that? Is that a beer?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And it's no disrespect to anyone who likes that, but it truly, we were so destroyed that for the rest of the trip, we didn't have a sip of alcohol. We were just living in the shame of what we had done.
How long was the trip? Like a weekend?
It was like 4 days. And the rest of it, we were like,
well, that's why they gave you that much alcohol. They
burn us
probably
out,
wanted you to consume it in probably moderation, but they should have known better with 18-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, I don't even know what we did for the night. I think we just like watched movies. That was it.
But like, that's kind of lit.
I know. We really cracked the code early on, but in the moment we were like, oh, we're so boring.
Do you still have the photos now of the photo shoot?
Okay, you know what my dumbass did?
Deleted them?
No.
Okay.
Worse. So I have the photos, and when I was, When I got my house, we were decorating it, and the interior designer was like, oh, I'd love to have like 4 photos in your office, like right here lining the wall. And she's like, just send me scans of like whatever Polaroid, something that you have, we'll blow it up. And I decided for some idiotic reason to get the photos of us just holding just profuse amounts of alcohol doing in this hot tub and have it blown up behind me. So anytime I'd be taking a work call, there's just this egregious photo behind me. And I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. Because I guess my frontal lobe never developed.
No, and sometimes it doesn't. Take me as an example. But like, I don't know. That to me feels like the perfect thing to hang up in your office. Like this was a cornerstone of my career. It had nothing to do with professionalism.
It's all the free shit I got. What's the craziest free thing you got?
I mean, like, craziest probably isn't the same definition of crazy as your story. I got, like, a fridge.
Whoa.
From, no. I know that probably
mini
sounds.
Mini fridge?
A mini fridge. It was some brand with a beverage. I don't remember the name. And I actually do think I remember the name, but I'm not trying to, like, drag them through the fucking mud. The fridge came completely, like, shattered.
Oh.
Like, the glass was shattered. The shelves were glass. They were shattered.
Yeah.
And so I just had a crime scene appear at my door, and then I had to deal with it all. So that was pretty crazy. I mean, other than that, I don't know if it was like necessarily a free thing. I got gifted because it was work. But like when you like do tours or stuff like that, like going to Australia, I went to Australia for like a week and a half for free and got paid. So like that was
Was VidCon ever an international thing?
God, VidCon. Yeah, I think they did an Amsterdam one, which is like
And were you a part of any of those?
I was a part of VidCon 1 year, and it was like the worst convention of my life. Not because of VidCon specifically.
Yes.
It was just a very dark time in my life. Like, not me personally, but it did affect me.
Sure.
So basically, I was supposed to go to VidCon with my friend, and we were supposed to do like a panel together or something like that of just us. And mental health stuff escalated, and they were not able to come with me, but everybody was asking where they were the whole time.
Yeah.
And bitch, I did like a 250 person meet and greet or something.
Yeah.
I was sobbing. Then I did a meet and greet, and then I would just go back to my room and sob. It was so brutal. But then I saw Honey Boo Boo, and like that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that really does make up.
That turned the mood around.
Was it your friend going through something, or you were
my friend?
Your friend,
but it was like devastating to hear a friend, like it was like the night before we were supposed to leave.
Yeah.
They like opened up to me about
the stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like, was that the first time you feel like you've had, cause I pretty early on for me, I realized it was public and private. And like there is still like the show must go on. I mean
the amount of times I could make probably 3 hour long videos of like me crying between like ad reads and stuff.
Yeah.
The show must go on.
Yeah.
But what were you going to ask?
No, I was just like, was that one of the more pivotal moments, or had you already been accustomed to kind of that?
I had already like tried to kill myself before. So like I was, not to brag, kind of an expert.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't anything like new to me. It was just someone who kind of felt unpredictable.
Sure.
And me being there physically with them, I knew that they could be okay. So me being away and being reminded of it constantly of like, oh, where's so-and-so? It was just like wild. Because I've obviously dealt with every kind of mental illness in the book.
Same, yeah. Not
what
every,
is this, a pain
every,
battle? No, a no, pain no. off?
Please, come on.
But yeah, it was just one of those things where like, oof. I think that was like my last convention and I was like,
I can't do this.
I retire.
Yeah.
Also, I was staying in a room with bunk beds.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
That is actually insane. I think that it's so easy to project, even from my standpoint, assuming that there is more of a luxurious experience behind the scenes.
I mean, I'm sure there are I think the early days, like if you were like a Tyler Oakley, a Dan and Phil, Jenna Marbles or something like that, I think it was probably really lit.
Yeah.
But I like got there after it was like heavily commercialized.
Hence
the bunk beds.
one of the hustles that we used to do while we were working on our like Disney shows was that on weekends sometimes we'd fly out and we would do meet and greets at more, you know, at like different small town.
Like a comic. Oh.
Yeah,
like not at a Hot Topic.
Sure, literally. I'm like, because we were the exchange for doing something that is high exposure in entertainment, like working on a Disney or even working on Netflix, is that typically they'll be like, we're not going to pay you the equivalent what you would get on a network show.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of just like bring in some extra money, we would do that. And I remember dealing with a similar thing, not that exact situation, but really struggling with the public and private of it all, being like, I know that these people are hoping to have this experience and this emotional exchange with me. And I kind of have to like bring it together. And a lot of my issues were more around the fact that on top of dealing with mental health stuff, I was like, none of these kids know that I'm running on no sleep. I've sometimes taken two flights to get here.
Yeah.
And I'm very burnt out and I'm like having to kind of.
Cause you're like at the end of the day, you're a kid.
Yeah.
Or like even if you're still 18, like that is still so young to have done everything that you've done and still be doing it, if anything, at a more accelerated rate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely your. And it's weird because now I'm at the age where I'm just like, why can't I do things the way that coming back to the why conversation, sometimes I have to ask myself, like, I'll be like, where's my stamina? Why back in my day, I used to walk to the bus stop in the way.
No, but
the dead of winter.
It's true. Like I remember thinking like, oh, well, I just won't allow myself to feel old. And then I'm like, oh, shit.
No, that's not.
That came back and bit me in the ass.
It's so bad.
I just don't think you can think like that. Like I still feel very young and like, woo. But like, I'm also very tired. And like, I just think it changes. It changes your priorities, not for necessarily the worse, just different.
Yeah. Because I mean, even now I'm known amongst my friends as being the really like intensely boundaried around like when I leave a place, I'm just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, of course I'll abide by a social contract and someone's birthday. I'll be like, yes, of course we're going to sing happy birthday.
Of course.
I'll wait a little bit and then I'll leave. But especially now I'm kind of just, if I don't get my 8 hours, I'm...
Oh, yeah. I wish I was one of those people. Like, it's like, okay, I got three. Let's just be thankful we got that.
That three's brutal.
Three is, but it's still better than none.
Yeah.
Like, the worst is like when you're up to like five, you get like an hour and a half of sleep and then you're like, well, the sun's up and I am too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. But listen, you came out as bi in 2023.
Yeah.
And you're also sober.
Yeah.
Which struggle would you say is more character building?
The one that got me more attention.
Which was? I think the bi one, because you got a whole Teen Vogue article.
Oh, you're so right about that. What was more character development for me? That's a really hard question. No one's asked me that. I would say probably probably coming out, just because there was also the confrontation around my parents' own expectations for my life,
yeah,
and them having to kind of really wrap their heads around something like that.
Being queer in like Indian culture frowned upon? Because I know there are some cultures where it's like almost embraced.
Yeah, it's complete opposite. Yeah, it's just not. I think it's more of a lack of understanding of not understanding why it happens.
That's literally all phobias. It's like a lack of good old fashioned understanding.
Exactly, and I think the hardest part of that was my parents. When I was getting sober, there was a clear understanding of like this is for his betterment. He feels like there's something wrong that he's trying to address.
It's it feels like a more straightforward topic to address of like, oh, it's simply getting better, making yourself better.
And I think on a more social level, no one's ever going to really, unless you have your own issues with substances, you're never going to attack someone for doing that, for getting sober, right, for any reason. Even if they're like, oh, I don't have any issues, I just like prefer not to engage in this anymore. Whereas coming out had a lot more to do with engaging. Yeah, sober, more of an internal experience, really having to reckon with that. Yes, coming out was an internal experience, but having a lot more to do with, because from my parents' standpoint, it's like, okay, you know, we have always reinforced that we love you. We want to be in your life. We're so eager to be in your life. But struggling as to why the public needs to know about this.
To know that.
Yeah. Like what is this providing you? What's the, and it's hard for me to be like.
It's just hard because it's just a part of who you are. And it's like, why, like if everything else about me is public, like no, I'm not saying I need to, every time I fuck someone need to alert the world of who it was, but like it is a facet of who I am. I do think when you are closeted, it's something that you're tackling or like always thinking about and having internal dialogue about from a very young age. So like I can imagine the sobriety aspect of it felt a lot more straightforward of like, okay, something's got to change. Whereas like when you come out, it's like, how's my family going to take this? How will my friends take this? How will society treat me like in any given situation or day? I think it's just like a lot more of a internalized process for much longer.
Yes.
Obviously, that's people really can have, you know, a long journey of sobriety that may be difficult. But I do think when you are closeted, it's something that you're constantly like thinking about, whether it's like, how do I address this or how do I hide this?
Yeah. And with getting sober, there are versions of this where you're like, oh, these are the people I used to drink with. And if I get sober, will they stop wanting to be friends with me? Sure, there was that.
Did that happen?
No, not at all.
Okay,
actually,
I was
surrounded by a bunch of people that had healthy relationships with substances, and I was kind of the like odd one out. And I was also very high functioning, so I think from a distance, no one could really tell.
Yeah,
but my core group was very much like, this is something that he will eventually need to come to terms with on his own, and like a nudging of eventually getting there. But no, with sobriety, it just kind of richens and deepens and gets better. Like you always get on the other side of whatever thing you're struggling with. And with coming out, you're kind of like, if I go further into this, what am I risking?
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Absolutely. How old were you when you got sober? Or like when you...
Honestly, I'll tell you off camera, but like not here, just because I have a protection around like the amount of time that I've been sober.
Got it.
Yeah, because sometimes I feel like people get really like, I'm very, if you see me in person, I'll tell you. But I think that I worry sometimes, as I've thought a lot about this, where I'm like, if I talk about this on a public scale, what is going to be a healthy amount of transparency, but also not feel like it's putting pressure, like a negative amount of pressure on this thing that I've built.
Yeah.
It's been in...
Do you think that people would give you negative pressure?
No, not at all.
What does like negative pressure look like for sobriety?
Yeah.
Like,
I think that sometimes as I've, you know, kind of gathered tidbits from other people who have spoken about it on a more public level, to different degrees of transparency, it's just that it can sometimes feel like, oh, I have now stated this thing and this is a thing that I need to live up to.
Yeah.
And I think that's very helpful on a more personal level. Like I'm very big on, if we're out at a bar and we'd never met before and you turn to me and you're like, oh, like, what do you want to drink? And I was like, oh, I'll just get a water. And you're like, oh, not tonight. I'd be like, yeah, I've actually been sober for X amount of time. And maybe it's irrational, but sometimes I worry that when people have come forward with the amount of time that they've had, it has created this expectation. Like, it has created, if your sobriety is ever threatened, it can create like a harder fall.
I get that. Like, yeah. If you did slip up, it would almost seem like, oh, well, those 8 years were for nothing.
Yeah.
That?
Yeah. And it's just like, it is a harder thing to explain.
But also, like, I don't think you need to explain any of it. Like, I think it's so refreshing to hear people want to have parts of themselves or their life that they don't want to give the public.
Yeah.
Because I mean, now more than ever, it's like, oh my God, I mean, everybody's like posting poll on X and like, yeah. It's like everybody's sharing so much of themselves where yeah. I'm like, oh my God. Like, yeah. So I respect that. I never thought about sobriety like that of like, do you feel a constant pressure of like not fucking it up?
For my loved ones.
Yeah. Yes.
And not because, I mean, ultimately my sobriety is for me, but I am keenly aware of the amazing things that I have in my life. And really what it ties into is I've dealt with similar issues with mental health, and I ended up in treatment for wanting to take my own life.
Yeah.
And I know for me, if I start drinking again, it will get bad enough that my depression will come out of remission.
Yeah.
And the safety nets that I have in place will be threatened. And thus I'm a risk to my own life. And that is something that I've already put my loved ones through, and I just can't imagine putting them through again. And I think that's the tension point that
absolutely
remains.
Especially yeah. as you get older, you understand, I think, a lot more of how things come off. Like, because when I was 20, 21 is when I was like, yeah, this is it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And like now I look back and I like still have, you know, suicidal ideation.
Sure. Yeah.
But like that's just something that I mean, I hope it goes away. But like I think it's something I'll always have to live with because like it's become so habitual in my brain of like, this is inconvenient.
Yeah.
Like, but I now know that I would never do that. Really, obviously shit can happen and things get dark. But I really do think like I know how that would affect people. I understand the cause and effect a lot more.
And I think what people fail to understand about that experience of walking up to the line is, and I've been trying to find the right metaphor for it, but I find a person's will to live. When we come into this world, we feel like our will to live is something really solid. It feels like steel. It feels like it's given. It's a given in our life. Like, why would that ever be threatened? But really, I found it to be this very delicate lace, and that like once you start like tearing it apart,
it starts to unravel.
Yeah, and it becomes very hard to like imagine actually trying to put lace back together. It's already so complicated.
I don't even know how to do it in the first place.
And I think like a person's will to live is similar to that. It's like when you go through the experiences that we have, it's like you create these tears in it, and it's a very delicate process to bring it back. But once you realize it's not always a given, that's a hard truth to unlearn.
Oh my God. How the fuck are you so wise at 27?
Lots of therapy.
I
did so much therapy.
I'm like, oh my God. But it's crazy though. You're like spitting facts. Like, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Okay. Now for the funny part.
Someone being like, I am just trying to enjoy my lunch break.
No. I mean, I think one of the things I love about this show is that one, I never know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And two, I just think that, and I'm very much like guilty of this, where I feel that like everything needs to be really funny or like entertaining. But a lot of times the things that have been probably the most serious are like the most widely received because it's something I find what's so cool about this show is someone can call in or come on the show and tell a story. And while I've never gone through that exact experience, I know what maybe certain feelings along the way, like, oh, wow. It's wild how much of a shared experience life is. And that's why I don't hate when things like, I'm working on not hating when things aren't just only funny.
Sure.
Because like, I also feel like as a comedian, I feel like everything has to be funny or otherwise it's like, he's not a comedian. Why the fuck is he a comedian?
Mm-hmm.
It's like being a singer. It's like if you hit a bad note, it's suddenly like, they can't sing.
Yep.
Like, what?
And then if they only see you doing crowd work, then it's like, this is the greatest comedian to ever live. And when they pivot over to writing jokes, then it's like, well, why isn't this as funny as the crowd work?
Yeah, so I'm only joking. Like, I love that I'm able to have these conversations because, I mean, I'm not fucking sober, clearly.
But that's where so much of the humor comes in. I will never forget literally how I'm so type A as well, where I was just like...
You seem type A.
Very, very, very type A. To the point where when I had finally... reached the breaking point, and thankfully my like best friend and roommate was like, I need you to get help, like I'm very worried about your safety. And
that's
and
so a good fucking friend,
such an amazing friend,
because as a friend who's had to do that, like that shit sucks.
It's horrible.
It's hard because you're like, oh my god, are they gonna take this well? Are they gonna be defensive? Is this gonna fuck with our friendship? Like,
and it's such an intimidating like thing, because you're just like, exactly what you said, am I gonna make this worse or make this better? But some of my favorite moments in that experience of when I was like, okay, fine, I gotta find a rehab, and I was like, I want to have sign off and where I'm going, and I just like the laughter of having to call the treatment center, and I'll never forget this lady's voice, and she was like, hi, welcome to like intake. And I was like, hi, I'm seeing if you have any beds available. And she was like, yeah, we do, sweetie. What you in for? And I was just like, I was like,
she's acting like you're ordering a fucking pizza.
Literally. And she goes, and I was like, yeah, I want to take my own life. I'm like, I'm at risk of, at my own safety. She goes, yeah. Okay. Well, we have a free bed coming up soon. If you're interested, I think we can get you in. How about this?
She's suite? Like, we've got a presidential suite in Cabo.
Yeah. And I just loved the humor in it, because it's like, you can hold both things, or just like,
and sometimes like you do have to laugh. You have to find something to laugh at.
Yes. And that's where it's also why I allow myself to get to such an earnest place sometimes, because I being able to key about those things and being like, wasn't that so ridiculous? Like, it's like reading back when, you know, people read back journal entries and they're like, this was so cringe. Why did I?
No, it's like one of the reasons I can't journal. Because I'm just like, woo. Like, that shit gets crazy. Well, it seems like your family's been very supportive through everything. I mean, like the fact that they picked up their lives and moved a second time to support you in acting. Is your family like out there? Like, are they a bunch of characters, or are you like those?
My dad's a character for sure.
That's the vibe I got.
Yeah, he's like and I love him for it. But I'm the black sheep of the family. I'm like the only one who is in entertainment and wants to stay in entertainment. And my sister has absolutely no interest, not an ounce of interest.
No, my mom is a scientist, and my two brothers. I know one of them is going to be like, I don't work in finance, but to me, you basically do.
Yeah.
I fully feel you on that.
If you know how to use a spreadsheet, you work in finance in my book.
And this brother that I'm referring to fucking loves an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Which to me is the craziest fucking thing ever.
I was really lucky because my mom is a workaholic, and she very much wanted to keep her... She wanted to be engaged with her work, and she stayed in corporate America, and she just does not like attention. So she very much stayed on the back burner.
Does she not like attention, or does she not like attention but secretly does? No, like, my mom hates attention, but like that bitch loves it.
No, she genuinely is like...
Got it.
Yeah, like if she were to get, you know, awarded something at work, she'd prefer it be an email.
That is my mom.
Yeah. Yeah,
my mom would rather just not get an award.
Yeah,
like she's like, don't mark my name down in history, please.
It's fine. It's okay. Literally. And yeah, like my dad is they're both incredibly proud of me. So is my sister. But also the truth of the matter is like a lot of growing pains. Where there was so many times where, in the same way when you're a teenager going to high school and your parents, you feel like your parents are embarrassing you with like the way they go to drop off. Like my dad had to be at work with me all day long till I was 16. So I was very much like, there was always confrontation around what he wanted for me, what I think I should want for myself. Am I making the most informed decision? And how much I want them in my life, how much I don't want them in my life. Like there's been a lot of processes to get to this point. So it was never like we went into this being like, great, we have like a healthy relationship and proximity to your career in the, but I will say, if you like saw my dad's Facebook, he loves to post an album. He's like, That man was constantly taking photos on set.
What? I suddenly want to get a Facebook again just to friend him. Do you have any like standout stories about your dad?
Yes, just like, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have one.
He sounds hysterical.
So we, Jesse, I think it was season 4 and season 3 or 4, the White House had reached out and former First Lady Michelle Obama wanted to be on the show. And of course we were like, this is amazing. Absolutely. Of course.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Insane. And so it was the most surreal experience. We were in a studio lot, so there was a bunch of other TV shows filming there. They had to clear out the entire studio lot.
No, and it's crazy.
It was.
Joe Biden was vice president, and he lives next door to my high school, and his grandkids, I think, went, it was like a pre-K through, what's high school? 9 through 12.
Yeah.
Pre-K through 12. And so, when we would have, school spring day or whatever the fuck they were called, the Secret Service would come, and it was like a whole fucking thing.
Yep.
It's wild.
It's insane. And then she truly was amazing. She somehow miraculously memorized all of her lines
while she
was on the plane over here. And she's like, oh yeah, I was staying up. I memorized all the lines. Her team was lovely. And they invited us to come to the White House Easter egg roll. So we're elated. And I'm so excited. I'm like, my immigrant father has struggled to come to the States and is meeting not only a U.S. president, but the first black president.
That is so fucking cool.
It's so cool. And so when you get there, you are in a line.
At the White House.
Yeah. To meet the first family. And one by one, we're going up, and finally we go into the room, and obviously you go into you're, how
being
can you not
in
be
the White House itself is just fucking crazy.
It's insane.
Is just an insane feel. What's weird is they used to offer garden tours and stuff.
Yeah.
I think pre 9/11. And my mom, so I got invited to one of their holiday parties or whatever. And so I brought my mom because I was like, yeah, not your photo son taking you to the White House and not your finance sons. But she was like, wow, I did garden tours, but I've never been in here. And there is something, it's very I don't know about it now because this was pre the fucking mess we're in now.
Literally.
But it was just almost still.
Yeah. The weight of it too, the emotional weight of where you're at,
feel it.
Yeah, you do. And then
I can't even imagine. I didn't even meet the president when I was there. So I can't imagine.
It was surreal. We were walking up and the President Barack Obama and Mrs. Obama, greeted my father and I. And then it's basically meet and greet. And so we get in the center. They wrap our arms around each other. And the photographer's counting down. Okay, everyone smile. 3, 2. And my father shouts, stop, stop, stop. So I think this is the end.
This is, yeah.
We are two brown men.
Secret Service.
I was like, we're dead. I was like, we're being taken out right now. I was like,
we're getting Easter egg rolled out of here.
I was like, we are next to a sitting president, the first black president. And I was like, I can't wait for the last image I see to be the sniper red light. And my father proceeds to look down at his belly, and he proceeds to suck in his gut. And then President Barack Obama turns to him and goes, yep, sometimes you just got to suck it in, bud. And we take the photo.
Your dad is real as hell. Honestly, that is real as fuck.
Isn't that insane?
But I live.
And then my mom, who once again does not love attention.
You just see her hair poking out in the back.
we were graciously invited the following year. And I got to take my mom and my sister. My sister proceeds to go up to Shaquille O'Neal and ask him if he wants to go into the photo booth with her.
I'm screaming out. Is your sister older or younger?
Older by 14 months. She's bare. And so it's her, Peyton List, and Shaquille O'Neal just in a photo booth.
Crying.
And we're inching towards. And when you are walking up, they hand you a card with your names on it.
Yeah.
And then someone comes up to you later as you get closer to the front of the line and they ask you how you pronounce your name. They phonetically write it out. And then they announce you as you're walking into the room. And the first person they announce is they they go entering like Jaspinder Barrar, which is my mother's name. And of course, because he's phenomenal, President Barack Obama goes, "Jaspinder, it's so lovely to meet you." And afterwards, we take the photo, we leave, and she turns to me and she goes, "Karan, he knew my name." And I go, "No, Mom, they announce your name."
She's
when you
like,
come.
"No, I think he knew my name."
Dead ass, Chris. That's what she said. She goes, "No, like, I don't think so." And I was like, "Mom, you think the most important person in the leader of the free world is spending his evenings just randomly doing a Wikipedia deep dive as to who my parents are?
Ryan.
Like, love you, Jas. I appreciate it. You're doing great work in corporate America.
This is why your mom needs to be in front of the camera, because she seems funny as fuck.
Wait till you get... You know what's so funny about her? She never drank any alcohol when we were like growing up. And then after we turned 21, my sister and I were like, "Come on, like, let loose," or whatever. And my mom is... And this is simply just like a taste preference thing. She just drinks straight up tequila shots. Not even a lot. She'll just be like, "Hi, could I get a shot of Casamigos?"
My mom, same thing. I grew up not really like seeing my parents drink.
Yeah.
They obviously had alcohol in the house. Like when they had like family friends over,
yeah,
all the kids would be in the basement and like the adults would be. And like remember they had alcohol because I took some of it to the basement and refilled this vodka bottle with water. But now as an adult, my mom is so much more, she will like get a shot of something just to sip. And I'm like,
yes,
Mom, that's not right.
It's so, and she doesn't even get drunk. She's just like,
oh no, yeah. My mom definitely gets down. Love you, Mom. You know.
Wait, what, I was about to say, is this the right question? Be like, what kind of scientist is she?
She's a chemist. Research? She does.
You got it. Reach for it.
I know she has a PhD and she's probably going to kill me saying that out loud, because she's like lived her whole life hiding that. And I'm like, if I had a fucking PhD.
Wait, are you serious? She's bashful about her PhD?
No, she's like intimidated by it. Like,
why?
She says people feel very intimidated by it.
As they should.
And thank you. I'm like, if I went to another however many years of school that is, I would never shut the fuck up, even if I didn't get the PhD.
I never shut the fuck up about my high school diploma, and that's all I have to show.
I went to college for photography, and I still don't shut the fuck up about that.
That's insane.
Crazy. But, yeah, I just know she did chemistry. I really don't understand what her job is now.
That's brilliant.
She does, like, risk stuff or... I
risk in chemistry. I like it.
The way that I have not one clue of what anybody in my family does, and I think that's the way it should
be. Did you excel at science when you were in school? Come on.
Bitch.
I'm just, you never know. Runs in the genes. Yeah.
No, I actually almost failed chemistry in high school. And my mom was like, why didn't, my dad was also a scientist, which is crazy because he's dumb as shit. And they were like, "Chris, how did you get like a C in chemistry?" And I was like, "Chemistry starts with a C." And they were like, not into that at all. But I always say I'm not smart. I know I'm very smart. I'm not traditionally smart. Like, I am not good at, like,
I feel
remembering
on a spiritual level.
Chemical abbreviations. Like, I don't know the difference between a milligram and a gram.
I will never...
Well, actually, no, I do know. I'd rather have a gram of weed than a milligram of weed.
Really proud of you there.
I think.
I will never have a greater revelation in life the way that I did when I first understood what PEMDAS was in Algebra 1.
Parentheses, exponents, multiply, divide, addition, subtraction.
And I felt like a genius.
No, that is like the equivalent of people doing like trigonometry. I'm like, but I know PEMDAS.
Yeah, I'm just like, time to get down to the order of operations. I know what I'm doing, and I know how this ends.
That is probably one of the only things from math class that I still use.
Really?
Have you used Pythagorean theorem?
No, of course
exactly.
not.
Exactly. And I remember in high school, I would be like, what do we even need this for? Like, respectfully, like, we should be learning home ec.
Yeah.
Like, I should be learning what taxes are and how to pay them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, teach me how to fucking buy a house.
Yeah, currently I have everything riding on a girl named Sabrina who does my taxes. And I'm just like, she's doing a great job.
Shout out to CPAs everywhere. I would be dead.
Yeah.
But I would always ask, like, why do we need this in life? And they're like, well, in case you want to work at NASA. And I'm like, I just got cast as a gay dad in the fucking school play.
Did you?
I'm not working at NASA.
Then how did photography come into the picture?
Well, I wanted to go to college for acting because I was like a big theater kid. I like auditioned for commercials as a kid. Like I was one of those people who like they posted about like a talent search and I was like, Mom, this is my moment. Never was my moment. I think I booked an ADHD commercial, which was like a little too on the nose. They really typecast that shit. But I just wanted to act. And so I toured colleges and looked at like their theater departments, which is like fucking crazy to think about me doing theater like in college. But I was realizing, oh my God, the audition process. I really wanted to go to NYU.
Yeah.
The audition process seemed too out of my control. It was like you had to like memorize a thing and like a song and a dance and a fucking haiku. And I was just like, I don't think that's for me. So I was like, okay, I think photography, you just have to submit a portfolio. I know what all the pictures are going to be ahead of time. So like, it just felt like something a lot more controlled. And I did enjoy photography and really grew to love it by the time senior year of high school came around. It just felt like an easier thing to go to school for.
Could you ever see yourself getting back into acting or just like even trying
a play
or something?
I would be down, but like the idea of going to an acting coach sounds like my version of hell. I just like, what are we going to do? We're going to sit and analyze like how I'm saying I need to shit. Like,
yeah, it. I will say I'm a firm believer of, I tell people if you do acting classes, you also have to leave acting classes. You need time away from them because you cannot get it. Like, you can get so wrapped up in it. It just becomes unproductive. That's my personal
and
belief.
And I also just think like, put me in, coach. Like I've been acting my whole life. Like I give a shit about anything. I can do this.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just like the idea of like having to go and like I like that's.
Do you
like
do auditions every now and then?
More for like hosting stuff. But no, I would love to act. I just don't want to do any of the work to like that it takes to like prime yourself to act. Like I want
to be hired to like time to
play
be an actor.
Myself.
Yeah,
like I want to play like the deranged person who has like a no filter and no will to live.
It sounds like your agent's gonna call you and be like, I think it's time to write a pilot.
No, see, and that's like almost like, okay, I'll fine, I'll go to acting class.
Yeah.
Like writing a pilot. Do you write a lot of pilots, right?
No. I can't.
You don't.
I can't write screenplays for
you
shit.
You give such a vibe of like,
I can note the fuck out of one and I can like give you, especially now, I feel like I have enough experience that I can give you tangible notes that make sense and how like cause and effect of them, but actually writing it, no. I just sound like I'm talking to myself.
Sure.
Though like one time I attempted it. I also don't know how much it calls for me in the same way that the only thing I do behind the camera is directing. And that is kind of, I feel like good in that. And I can really enjoy it. But the feeling I get from acting is just really unmatched.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. That's beautiful.
Aww.
Thank you so much for being here today. This was so fun.
Thank you for having me, Christopher. This was so lovely.
The last time we saw each other, we were sweating our balls off before before meeting Mayor Mom Donnie. I looked at the footage. Why the fuck did you not tell me? I was not only sweating all... No.
You were fine.
No, do not interrupt a white man.
Sorry.
That is... But oh my God, I put that footage into edit. Oh my God. My shoulders were sweaty. I had a fucking circle on my back. People were hugging me and I was like, please just don't hug me. I'm disgusting.
I will say the way that you cut it, the way that you edited it, it wasn't noticeable. Cause you like jumped, you like, I saw the clips and you like jumped in on yourself.
I almost so put that footage in my computer and cried. I was like, oh my God, I look like I just finished swim practice. And no one told me. That was a fun night, though.
It was like a really enjoyable afternoon. It was so like such a strange circumstance, but it was all, my mom was thrilled that I was meeting Mom Donnie. I think that was the greatest thing to have come from me coming out in her eyes. She was like, "Wow, from that essay, he has now met Mayor Mom Donnie."
That's got to feel good, though.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Did you get a boyfriend from it?
No, I didn't. It's really...
Because you said you were like... You joked, I want to say. Like, you weren't actually serious.
Yeah, sure, I joked.
You were like... Listen, bitch, I'm trying to help you out here. He was like, I swear, I'm here just to get a... I'm here to get the picture so I can get a boyfriend. And I was like, that's real as fuck.
If this doesn't get me a swipe up, I don't know what will.
That's what you said. But that was so fun. And then I was like, shit, I need you on the podcast.
Please, honored to.
This was great. So fun. Thank you so much for being here. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to plug or Unplug? No. Such as the camera?
Yeah. thank you for listening to us. Yap. I will be selling merch at To Be Decided at Christopher's tour. I don't know the dates. I don't know the locations, but I know he's funny and he's very kind and welcoming, you know, even off camera. Wait. So you should go.
Oh. Okay, I love that your plug was plugging me, yeah, so I'll take it. Yeah, thank you for being here. We'll catch you guys on the after show after this, but again, be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, get your tickets, and if I don't see you on the after show, I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.